As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Previously, on About Them Cowboys.
So where are you adding the talent? Where are you getting better?
I truthfully don't know. Kyle Pitts, tight end from Florida, who can kind of be wide receiver too. Rashawn Slater, tackle slash guard from Northwestern. Caleb Farley, Virginia Tech cornerback. Patrick Surtain, Alabama cornerback. And hell, I'll even throw in Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State. Those five guys.
Which is this one weird to say, KT? I kind of want him to draft Micah Parsons.
I don't think it's weird to say at all, because I think
it's not like a huge need for them, but like I kind of want some attitude and some awesome playmaking on that defense at some position. I don't care.
If you tell me he could be the next Bobby Wagner for Dan Quinn's defense, go get Micah Parsons at 10.
Yeah, like, come on, guys.
Oh, my God. How about them Cowboys? Woo! Yeah! And with the 12th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Dallas Cowboys select Micah Parsons.
Only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys indeed?
All right, there it is, Cowboys Nation. The About Them Cowboys Magic 8 Ball strikes again. And Micah Parsons is your newest first-round pick for the Dallas Cowboys. We had talked about this scenario in the past, I think more along the lines of our worst-case scenario episode a few weeks ago. So with how the draft played out for your Dallas Cowboys, no one who listens to this podcast should really be surprised about what happened. So we'll go over all that craziness here on this episode. So welcome in, Kent Garrison here, producing and running things behind the scenes and welcoming in the best of the best when it comes to talking all things Dallas Cowboys, especially the Cowboys draft. And those people are From the Ticket / The Athletic, Saad Youssef. From the Eagle, Kevin K.T. Turner. And from the Draft Show, Kevin K.T. Turner, I should say. And also from the Athletic, Father John Mishoda. Boys, I was in Chicago for the draft doing our national broadcast. And you know, I had my eye on the entire league, but I couldn't help but, you know, keep my eye on the Cowboys. And, you know, J.C. Horn goes off the board and there's Denver, and I'm like, okay, Justin Fields is still on the board, so this is a really important pick if you're Dallas, and it was Surtain, and I could not believe myself. I'm sure the reaction at the Star was the same, but I had no idea where the Cowboys were going to go, and was quite shocked when they went the Micah Parsons route, but you know what? It makes total sense when they need to address this defense, and you know, big thesis for the entire draft was defense. KT.
Absolutely. And, you know, I knew they were going to fill a ton of needs. You know, well, I think one thing I always think about with these plans, like, it doesn't matter how what we think about a player or how we have it graded. What matters is, did the Cowboys execute whatever type of goal that they had sought out to achieve? And clearly, they sought out to make sure that they got a good defensive playmaker and an outside cornerback, and if that was the same player, that's fine. And then make sure they filled a bunch of holes when it came to depth as well. And maybe offensive tackle, although I'm not sure that was one of their goals. We can talk about that here in a little bit. But I guess I walked away from that, and I'll start with you, John. I think the Cowboys were very happy with what they accomplished because I think they did execute what their goal was, and that was to get defensive help.
Absolutely, they did. I think one of the things I thought of throughout the draft was just how every time we did a mock draft, obviously, Saad, we did a couple together, and even on here when we talked about him and that, like, it just really shows you how meaningless, especially this year, doing a mock draft was, because there were several that I did that I didn't even talk about or publish because I were like, this thing is just so ridiculous, it could never happen. And I'd come up with a situation in the actual draft that could have happened for the Cowboys that's even more absurd than that. Like the idea that you could have had Rashawn Slater at 12, you at 44, you could have had Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah or Azeez Ojulari. You could have Marvin Wilson in the 6th or 7th. You could have Dylan Moses in the 6th or 7th. Like, there's just like a lot of things that if you would have had that in your mock draft, people would have been like, that thing's not even realistic. What are you doing? But it just speaks to that there's so much more than just watching the guys. There's so much more behind the scenes, the medicals, character things, stuff like that. But that specifically was in my mind, you know, late in the 3rd round when they take, you know, Nashawn Wright, who's a guy that, you know, Dane Brugler has as a 7th round guy or, you know, priority free agent. And they're taking him late in the 3rd round, and you're thinking, this guy might not make the team. If you're taking him in the 3rd round, this guy better be on your roster. And then they follow that up, though, at the top of the 4th the following day and get Jabril Cox, and it's like, okay, that's a great pick. If you would have had him instead of Wright, everyone would have loved it, you know? So it's just interesting the way it fell, but it's very clear that they were looking to address the defense. And even with them saying that, I didn't expect them to go as heavy on defense as they did. You know, I didn't even think they would take 10 picks. I thought they'd end up trading something away, end up picking like 8 or 9 guys. But not only that, they pick 11 guys and 8 are in defense. It's the most defense that they've taken since the drafts moved to 7 rounds in 1994. So, yeah, I didn't think they'd go quite that heavy on defense. But I will say the biggest thing that they accomplished is you look at all 3 levels of this defense. There's plenty of competition there now, you know, whether you're talking D tackle, some edge rusher help there. You know, nothing on edge rusher that should affect, you know, Randy Gregory or DeMarcus Lawrence, but the depth has certainly impacted major there. And then linebacker, obviously, things have changed quickly at linebacker. And then corner, you know, Adam Joseph, that's a key piece. He should have a great chance to start as one of the outside corner spots. The only thing they didn't address on the defense really is safety. I mean, you know, late in the 6th round there, they take Israel Mukamo. Who knows if he even ends up making the team. He thinks of himself as more of a corner, 6'4 guy, but maybe he ends up being working in the safety. Safety is the only thing in this draft that they didn't really address. And frankly, they didn't really have a great chance to because of the fact of if they wanted to get a good one, they were going to have to trade up in the 2nd round because the top 3 all went before they went on the clock. And honestly, even if they were higher up in the draft, let's say the Cowboys were picking, they had the 5th pick in the 2nd round, they weren't taking one of those safeties over Joseph. They wanted... Not getting corner in the 1st round meant they were taking corner in the 2nd. And so even if Merrig was there, they were taking Joseph over him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think overall they did, like you said, accomplish their goal. I thought the way that they went about it was really interesting. And I'm glad, you know, we were able to speak with Dan Quinn because that did help a lot in understanding just, you know, why, you know, they are drafting a corner who's not on a lot of people's boards at all. But they're taking him in the third round or whatever, just because, you know, this felt very different from Jason Garrett drafts, and I know that, you know, we're 2 years removed from that now, but last year just felt a little weird all over because of, you know, the pandemic, everything. But I just feel like, you know, with the way that they went about it, I feel like Dan Quinn had a huge say in the players that they did take, and I guess just the overall structure of how players went off the board. So I think, you know, overall they accomplished their goal, but we'll see what happens. At this point in the draft, everyone always says and this happened at the end of the first day, this happened at the end of the second day, where they're just like, yeah, we definitely got the guys that we wanted. Well, of course you did. It's the day of the draft. You always get the guy that you wanted on the day of the draft, but we'll see how that pans out, because I do think that there were some... I do think there were some holes that could have been filled, particularly safety, even if they weren't with premium draft picks. But, you know, we'll see what happens there.
Let me add this real quick, KT. One thing I wanted to, just because Saad mentioned Garrett, another major difference between this being a Garrett draft is, you know, there are several players here with some
character
off the field character concerns that Jason Garrett.
Right kind of guys.
Not that Jason Garrett never brought on guys like that, but certainly not all in one draft like this, where you have some things that you got to keep your eye on there with some of these guys off the field. And generally, Jason Garrett leaned a little bit more towards team captains. Several of these guys were team captains, but he leaned toward that a lot more than I would say maybe they have this year. So that's one other thing that was probably different from the Garrett draft.
Yeah, no, we know who those players are. And let's get into that when we zoom in. So let's zoom in on Micah Parsons right now. Let's start there. Pick 12. I want to explain to you what was going on for me on the air at the time, just for reference. And you guys, if you guys have any similar stories or you know, your thoughts, I was in the boat of I would have taken Slater over Parsons. But again, that doesn't matter. What was relatively intriguing, although I thought it was really annoying that Tim Tebow and Aaron Rodgers tried to steal draft night. Like, guys, go away.
Tebow.
Like, go
away. That's exactly
away for
what
a little
I
bit.
Said. Yeah. That's exactly when I saw the Tebow thing. I was like, this feels exactly like Tim Tebow trying to get his name out there on primetime television during the draft. And nothing more than that. That's exactly right, KT. That's exactly what I thought it was.
I'm just glad Aaron Rodgers was there to put him in his place.
Yeah, I know, right? But like leading up to the draft, well, then you hear all this buzz out of Denver. And Mark Schlereth, who works at a Denver radio station, and he's tweeting things out like, the deal is as close to done as possible, and things like that are happening, and you're going, wait. Well, if Denver's picking at 9, one pick ahead of the Cowboys at 10, then Green Bay's getting that pick if this trade is going down. And then if you just spend just 3 minutes looking at over the cap and how contracts work, you very quickly realize, oh yeah, the Packers can't even make this trade because they don't have enough cap room and this thing can't happen. But as that pick was going down and in the leading minutes before they went on the clock, before Denver went on the clock, I was going, there's a chance this is Green Bay's pick. And maybe it is down the road. Maybe Surtain is the pick that goes to Green Bay if that trade ends up happening. But that trade wouldn't make sense to happen until after June 2nd. But one thing that happened for me is I was doing the draft show that I used to do with Kent back in the day, and someone made the comment, they're not in the war room, and that's around pick 8.
Well, did you guys see the shot on TV? I don't know if y'all were watching, when they traded back of just Charlotte sitting alone in the war room. That I laughed so hard. That was the most Cowboys shot of all time. Like, oh crap, this isn't going our way. They trade back, and you know, I mean, it's not like they abandoned the draft or anything, but that was what happened there, is they all had to go in the other room and be like, decide what the hell is going on, instead of making a scene for the cameras. You know, it's like, let's talk this out, let's figure this out, you know. And that was just a very indicative image of how this draft went for the Cowboys.
Well, yeah, but like at 10, so when I was told that no one's in the war room, I'm sitting there going, okay, well, if they're not in the war room at 8, because things are happen ahead of time, for those who don't know, the draft is happening ahead of when it's announced on TV. And I'm sitting there going, okay, then they're trading back, right? Okay, they're trading back. So when I got to the Star, there was rumors floating around that they had already been on the phone with the Bears at 20 and their GM Ryan Pace. And I was like, if you're talking to the Bears, then you're getting 2 first-rounders next year. So that's happening. Well, it turns out it was the Eagles. They traded back to 12. Obviously, the Eagles take Devontae Smith at 11. I mean, at 10. Then the Bears and the Giants have the trade for Justin Fields at 11. And then you have, at 12, the Cowboys take Micah Parsons, who's a very good player. But, John, I'd like to get your thoughts on it, because I think we all agree that he's a good player on the field. But there's a lot there. There's a lot to drafting that player, not only with what you already have on your roster, how he fits in. I mean, there's a ton to unpack with Micah Parsons.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that we mentioned. There's some character concerns there that he's had to address with every team that he talked to. And, you know, these guys are going to be prepared with what they say, because their agents, other people around them, are going to prepare them in the pre-draft process to answer these questions in the best way possible. As I always say, actions speak louder than words, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, see how everything works out with him with the Cowboys. But that was a thing that was connected with Micah Parsons. Anytime you would talk about him, it was more than just the player on the field. There was, you know, some concerns off the field. And so if they don't have to deal with any of that and he's healthy and he plays, I think everything will take care of itself for him because he is a special talent. There's no question about that. But I agree with you, KT. I thought they should have taken Slater too. And but with that being said, the fact that they didn't take Slater there, the fact that they had multiple opportunities to take offensive tackles in the third round, they could have taken one in the second. And because they didn't, and they didn't take one until the fourth, that should help Cowboys fans maybe feel a little bit better about the health of Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins. Because again, actions speak louder than words. And although the Cowboys have said all these positive things about those two offensive tackles who missed all, if not, you know, well, 14 games missed for Tyron, all for Lyle. If they would have drafted, they had opportunities to draft offensive tackles there to, if they were really, really concerned about that position. The fact they didn't, that's a pretty good sign for them, because obviously those are key members of this offensive line. But yeah, no, Micah Parsons, the other takeaway I'll have is, so after the post first round press conference, Jerry Jones kind of hung out a little bit longer and talked to a few of us, which is the first time he's done that really since the pandemic. So it was kind of felt like old times again. And I specifically asked him, you know, is this pick admitting that, you know, there was some failure there in your guys' part with Jalen Smith or Leighton Vander Esch? And he's like, no. I want to be real specific about that. No, Micah Parsons adds to what those guys do. Now, I'm not surprised that Jerry said that, but he really went in on the whole pass rush aspect of Micah Parsons and the possibility that he might be the best pass rusher in this draft, because one, it's not a great pass rusher draft. You wouldn't be saying that if you had a Myles Garrett in this draft. You wouldn't even be saying it next year with Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. So it also says something about this draft class that a linebacker that went at 12 might be the best edge rusher. But here's the thing that we're going to want to have to see here is that watching the Cowboys over the last decade, they're not a team that blitzes a ton. And the history with Dan Quinn in Atlanta is that he wasn't blitzing a ton. But Micah Parsons said that when he talked to Dan Quinn after he was drafted, one of the first things they talked about was how often he's going to bring him on blitzes because of his special ability as an edge rusher. That's supposed to be the part where he can play, you know, the typical linebacker spots. He's probably, we haven't seen him really a ton in coverage. I know, KT, you've watched him like at Penn State. He's not really, mm-hmm. The coverage thing doesn't really jump out, but it's the ability to go downhill to get after the quarterback. That's where he could be a special player. And the other thing is that he helps them be more multiple in defense, which is what Dan Quinn wants to do. So with all of that said, I think it's a really good pick, especially considering they got an additional third rounder out of it. They said that he was higher on their board. Multiple people have confirmed that he was higher on their board than the two corners. The only thing I will say about that is that I don't know that you even trade back two spots if you're absolutely like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy is here. I don't think you even trade back for that third rounder. You're like, we're taking him right now, because you don't, even though you know Philly probably isn't taking him, you don't know what the Giants are going to do. And look at what the Giants did. The Giants traded back to 20. Now, of course, hey, Justin Fields was there, so that made sense. But there's always a chance that another team comes up and is like, you know, Giants, we'll give you this, because we know that all these defensive players are cleared out right now. The only other one there is Parsons. And if we don't jump in front of the Cowboys, they're going to take him. And you could have lost Parsons, too. And then what happens if that goes down? Then what do they do?
I think it's Slater at that point, right?
Yeah, probably.
I think it's probably like they had two or three guys that were like, okay.
Or Quiddy Pay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I think they're trading to 15 because I think the Patriots might be moving up at that point, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. as well.
Here's what knows what's at 15.
What stuck out to me just quickly here, it, speaking of what you're talking about, John, is that, you know, the offensive line and Tyron and Lyle, it convinces me not that they feel good about their health long term. They feel great about it in the short term, right? They feel great about it this season. They feel possibly better, you know, good about it next season. And so, you know, if you draft a Rashawn Slater, yeah, he might be the left tackle of the future. But if you're trying to win now, who's the player that can help you now? And Micah Parsons was the player that can help you right now. And this, we talked about that, you know, previously. It's like, if they draft Penei Sewell, what do they do with him? Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's probably going to be, you know, Pro Bowler eventually. But like, if you've got a healthy Lyle and a healthy Tyron, he's not playing tackle for you. So what do you do? And so, you know, when that situation arose for the Cowboys and the quarterbacks were off the board, it didn't surprise me to see them go that direction, because Micah Parsons can help them immediately.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm the same way. Like, I think it's a great pick, and obviously he was the most talented player on the board. But The only point of hesitation that I kind of had was we talked about premium positions versus not premium positions. Linebacker is not quite running back, but you know, it can be in that mold. As John just, you know, got done explaining for like 5 minutes, though, it's not, they don't plan to use him as a linebacker, which is really good to hear, because you can't afford to use him as a linebacker because no one plays a 3-4, 4-3 defense anymore. You play nickel dime, you only have two linebackers on the field. If you're doing that, then you are either admitting that you were wrong about Leighton or Jalen, or you're not going to be able to use Micah as much as you want. So if he's being used as a pass rusher, I think it could be a really good selection. All I'll say, and this is hindsight, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but if you told me that you got Rashawn Slater, or really pick from the litter on whatever was left in the first round, and then Jabril Cox in the later rounds, and if you told me, like, you know, you have Jabril Cox, Leighton Vander Esch, and Jalen, I still feel pretty good about the linebackers, even without Micah Parsons. Again, comes back to how you use Micah Parsons, but if they use him as a pass rusher, if they use him, the other thing is, we heard this about Jalen so much last year, right? Where it was like, okay, if he can't do pass coverage, he can't do this, use him on blitzes, use him to come downhill and things like that. Different defensive coordinator, I understand, but you know, it feels like we've kind of also heard this before.
Let me just point out with that, though, that's because I think we got to a point, and a lot of people that watched the Cowboys got to a point where it was like, well, what can we do with Jalen? And it wasn't necessarily, oh, this is going to be great. It was, well, what can he do?
Right.
And let me be clear on the whole Jalen rushing the passer. While he's done it at a solid level, especially when they've asked him to blitz, it was really what he was before the injury at Notre Dame, when they really thought, and that's what you're going to get in Micah Parsons, where Micah Parsons is going to play linebacker. And I will say, no one should be surprised if Jalen Smith or Leighton Vander Esch aren't on the team next year. Like they'll be on the team this year, but I don't see them. I don't see them picking up Leighton Vander Esch's fifth year option. That doesn't mean that they won't re-sign him. I mean, they had him with Morris Claiborne and they still ended up re-signing him, but I don't see them picking that up, and they can find ways to get out of Jalen's contract. So Micah Parsons, you don't take him at 12 because you're like, yeah, we'll use you as a situational pass rusher here and there. No, you got him at 12 because you want him on the field all the time. So he's going to definitely play some linebacker. He's going to play linebacker, but he's going to be used in kind of a hybrid way where he's going to be getting downhill a lot more and things like that. But I think that Jalen would have had more success in that pre-knee injury. And then that also, though, is why, or yeah, knee/foot. But that's also why Jalen fell to where he did, because Jalen could have done all that pass rush and all the other stuff if he doesn't have that injury, and he probably goes top 5-6, you know. So I understand what you're saying, Saad, and I know a lot of people are going to make those parallels, you know, between the two of them like that. I just think that Micah Parsons has got a better chance to excel in that role than Jalen does, and if he's excelling in that role, he'll force Dan Quinn's hand. He'll have to use him more in that role.
Yeah, and it's also a flawed comparison on my part as well, because Dan Quinn is obviously new defensive coordinator. So, you know, he's going to have a new entire system, things like that. And so, yeah, I it's not apples to apples. And I agree with you. I mean, you know, Micah Parsons is far more talented now than what Jalen Smith is now. So you're absolutely right.
And then the thing is okay, so Jalen's not going to be your guy going downhill blitzing on the quarterback. Jalen's not great in pass coverage. That certainly seems to be what Jabril Cox does at best. It seems like you're going to want Jabril Cox out on the field going against these running backs out of the backfield, going against these tight ends in, you know, passing situations. So, it doesn't look great for Jalen Smith right now that pick was made. I mean, he's going to say positive things. It does not look good for him.
No. They're going to cut him, and they're going to wait. They're going to let him play one more year, and then the smart thing to do would be to cut him. The thing is, they could have cut him a month ago before his guaranteed money kicked in and he got that roster bonus. They could have cut him then, but at the time you're looking for for that outside cornerback. They didn't know they were going to get Parsons. This is very loose. So I don't want anyone to take this like literal, but it's like, okay, it's kind of like, well, you want Sean Lee and Bruce Carter to work out. Okay. Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith. We want this to work out. You know, maybe Micah Parsons and Jabril Cox is the next shot at this. And they're going to get a year to kind of get acclimated. Although I will say this, Micah Parsons doesn't come off the field now. Like Micah Parsons, you take him at 12, he is not coming off the field. Jalen Smith will have to come off the field. And if he's got a problem with it, I don't know. Maybe he needs to go work out with the defensive ends. I don't know what to say. But he's not coming. Like, Micah Parsons, I'm taking you at 12. You're not coming off the field.
Well, here, and again, like I always say, actions speak louder than words. Much like I just said about the offensive linemen, them not taking one speaks volumes about what they feel like they have. When Dan Quinn was first hired, and he did that interview with Pro Football Focus, it was still in the early stages. It was in January. He talked about how, I don't really want to comment on too many things right now because I got to watch everybody. I want to watch the tape of all these guys. They're on the defense right now, okay? So time passes. He's had to watch that film, okay? Maybe he doesn't know the stuff behind the scenes. These are the actions that back it up. What's the biggest addition they made in free agency? It's Keanu Neal. Dan Quinn said last night, Keanu Neal's staying at linebacker. What's the biggest addition they made in the draft? Micah Parsons. So do you think Dan Quinn watched the film of those linebackers last year and was like, no, it looks like, you know, we got a solid group here. I think we're going to just keep building with Jalen and Layton. I have my doubts about that.
Yeah. And KT, to your point, like, I think it's interesting when you talk about what they could have done with Jalen. You know, the fact that the draft comes after free agency, unlike, you know, the NBA where draft comes first, then free agency, I do think it creates an interesting dynamic sometimes, especially with the cap situation and how money is used. Because, hell, last year, if you know you're getting CD, do you necessarily sign Amari to that money? Like, I don't know. I mean, if you know that you're getting Micah Parsons, do you make another decision on Jalen? I don't know, but that's something we'll never know. But it's just something that's interesting how it unfolds.
And I think everyone, Cowboys fans that are going to be skeptical of this defense, you know, I'm sure that many of us have seen on Twitter, there's plenty of Falcons fans that are skeptical of Dan Quinn's success and things like that. And hey, I'm not saying he's about to turn this thing into Legion of Boom, but I will say one positive thing that you have to take away from this by the players they drafted, the way Dan Quinn has talked up to this point, there are a lot of pieces on this defense now that it can do multiple things. And so you should be excited at least about the fact of, like, you know, the thing that everyone always would talk about with these Bill Belichick game plans is how they can change tremendously from week to week. And not to say that Dan Quinn's going to come in here and be Bill Belichick, but they have the pieces now where you can see them, because this certain team comes out and runs this, or this team's three wides all the time, or this team's more like this. They have a lot of pieces that can be moved around, you know, where you looked at last year, like, there's packages where they're bringing in C.J. Goodwin. That's done. That is done. Like, you bring in a guy like Keanu Neal because he can play some safety if you need him to. He can play multiple linebacker positions. Micah Parsons can play linebacker. He can come downhill, things like that. Both of these, the defensive linemen that they added in the third round, multiple different ways that they can use guys like that.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same as we'd seen in previous years under Rod Marinelli, would say, hey, man, this is the base 4-3. This is what you got. Hey, we don't care that you know what's happening. We're coming with it. Now you got to react to us. Like, I don't see that happening this year.
Now, I agree with you on that point, but the thing that I would say that confuses me, not does it confuse me, I think it frustrates me, is the whole idea that we can go back to McCarthy's comment last year about, doesn't matter, we'll take good players, make the players fit the scheme, right? That whole thing. Well, we're players over scheme. Relatively different, but if there's a couple studies that have been out just looking at consensus mocks and things like that, and the Cowboys are one of three teams with the Saints and the Raiders who probably got the least value in their draft because they might have been overdrafting players. Now, that's later on in the draft, and we'll get to those guys here in a second. With Parsons at 12, there was 13, I think 13 really excellent players in this draft, right? And I think that line ended at 13 with Slater. You know, they got one of those guys. So I think that's kind of what you knew was going to happen at 10. You knew you were going to get one of those guys. And I woke up Thursday morning, and I think, I'm sure we're all in the same boat here, kind of getting tipped off like, man, this kind of sounds like both corners, there's a chance. You know, we talked about it on a podcast. What's plan B? What's plan C? But like, you're right, though. The actions do show frustration and almost embarrassment on defense. Now, you go to Thursday night, you do the press conference. We'll save Micah Parsons off-the-field stuff. I don't know if we'll get into that today. Maybe we'll do it the next podcast or whatever. Because we do need to move on to these other guys. You have the thing, and Stephen Jones comes out and just says it clearly. We got to get a cornerback. And I'm going, okay, at 44, they're going to take a corner. Not even going to try to come up and get a safety. I was just kind of looking at my cornerback board, and I have, you know, so many corners available. I didn't think they had to force the issue. They take Kelvin Joseph at 44, a cornerback from Kentucky. Thing I'll tell you about Kelvin Joseph from his tape. The off-the-field stuff, that's another thing. From his tape, that is a first-round talent. That is a first-round player on tape. That is a second-round evaluation as a whole because of other stuff. Like, generally, if you get tipped off, if I get tipped off by one person on an off-the-field thing, I typically don't really, okay, off-the-field, I don't know the guy. I'm not really judgmental. I had three people reached out to me, and they're like, I can't believe they're doing this. I can't believe, like, Kelvin Joseph's not going to work in Dallas. And I'm like, holy cow, really? I'm trying to, like, piece it all together, but why? They're like, yeah, he needs to go to Buffalo or Green Bay or needs to go somewhere else. And I'm like, ah, that's the same thing I used to hear about Dalvin Cook, you know, and the Vikings are there. Like, if he goes to Florida, he's going to get in trouble. All that stuff, I feel weird even talking about that stuff because you don't know the guy. But there's enough smoke and it's almost enough of a left turn from what the previous regime was to take two guys who have off-the-field stuff that you can just go find. Like, it's out there. You can just go find it. But Kelvin Joseph's good, and he is your starting cornerback. So they mission accomplished in getting a starting quarterback.
You mean Boss Man Fat, not Kelvin
Joseph. Yeah, Boss Man Fat.
Boss Man Fat.
After they took Jabril Cox, I'm not going to lie, I told another reporter, what if 5 years from now Jabril Cox is the only player left from this draft class on the team?
When I saw the full list of players the Cowboys took, Jabril Cox was the one that stood out to me as like, that's a solid pick, you know, that really did. And I want to ask you guys about the pick of Joseph and the Raiders trading up and selecting Trevon Moehrig, the safety from TCU. KT, what did you hear about what the Cowboys thought of Moehrig beforehand, and did, you know, the Raiders get tipped off, maybe a Rod Marinelli connection there, that the Cowboys liked him, and they said, if we want this guy, we've got to get ahead of Dallas, because if he's there, that he's going to be their guy. What do you think about
that? I heard they liked Moehrig, but also Steven goes in front of everyone and makes the joke of, here we go, ignoring the safety position again, and we are, and then I, you know, wanted to drive my car into the tollway. Like, right into the guardrail of the tollway. Like, it.
Do you think if he was there, he would have been a pick?
It's not funny. No, I think they would have taken
the cornerback. Definitely wouldn't have been the pick.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have had a higher pick, and they could have been picking four or five spots higher, and they were taking Kelvin Joseph. They wanted to address corner, so.
They were going needs early.
And really look at the way the draft unfolded. If you didn't get one of those three safeties between Moehrig, Richie Grant, and Javon Holland, they were all picked before the Cowboys even went on the clock. And then another one didn't go until Andre Sisco at the top of the third. So when they miss out on one of those guys, I think those are the three most people had as like kind of separated in their own group ahead of everyone else. And so they weren't going to do that. Now, what's interesting though would be, is what if they would have gone and gotten Patrick Surtain fell to them, then maybe that's the spot where they would have been really wanting Trevon Moehrig. And didn't get a chance to get him there. And maybe then, you know, you go in another direction. But there's no question. Like, I mean, they talked to Trevon Moehrig. They did they had a Zoom call with him. And that, I know that he's a player that they liked. They just didn't like him more than Kelvin Joseph. Now, I should say that they might have had him higher on their board. But in terms of they really wanted to get a corner after they didn't get one in the first round. And they were going to be picky about the corners that they liked, because it has to be this longer type, just like we had heard for, you know, several years with Chris Richard. And then again, actions speak louder than words. You saw the players they've added. They're all long corners, you know, 32 inch arms and above. I'm saying this because, you know, if anybody wants to bring up, you know, the Asante Samuels and Elijah Moldens, you know, those are the type of guys that might not even have been on their board just because of how small they are.
Greg Newsom too, who everyone liked.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner StubHub has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
And can I say this too about Parsons real quick? I know we're on to Joseph. There will be times this year when after the game we're doing our podcast and we go, man, Micah Parsons is the best player on defense. Like that will happen multiple times this year.
That won't be tough.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. You could tell me at the end of the year that he leads the team in tackles, sacks,
and interceptions.
I wouldn't go that far.
Do it.
Tackles and sacks. I could see him leading the team in those.
Okay.
I don't think he will, but
I think he could.
I think Trayvon Diggs got the interception. He should have the interception.
He should.
Unlocked.
Okay, I'll give him forced fumbles too then.
Okay.
There you go.
It may be Kelvin turnovers. Joseph too. You know, it could be Kelvin Joseph. Like right. There's your starting, and then Anthony Brown could be your starting, you know, slot corner.
Right.
Or maybe it's Jordan Lewis, and maybe they have that competition for another year.
Right.
That's fine. They didn't seem too concerned about that. They seemed concerned about getting the outside cornerback no matter what, and they did. The thing about Kelvin Joseph, gosh, it's so frustrating that it's like I didn't think they would double dip in two guys that had issues or off quote unquote off the field issues. Again, I'm very uncomfortable talking about this. Like the Parsons thing though, I mean that's an alleged sexual assault. I mean, it's what that is. When we look at the details. The Kelvin Joseph stuff, it's more personality-based. He did get, you know, he did leave the school. Was he kicked out of Kentucky or did he leave the school?
I'm not sure.
There's things there that are very, like, almost uncertain. But, like, you know, we've talked about the kind of the annoyance of the, the me type of branding of
Boss Man Fat. Maybe he's like Dion and he can't separate prime time from Dion. He can't separate Boss Man Fat from Kelvin Joseph sometimes. It's just they cross over.
I don't care about the rap stuff. Like I think it's awesome. I think it's badass that he's got tons of rap albums. Six rap albums actually. Like I think that's great. I'll go straight to the beast for this because it's a little easier. Okay, we go to Dane's guide. Some of his former coaches went to bat for him, but some don't. He needs to grow up, according to one former coach. Scouts say his rapping passion might supersede his football passion. Suspended for the 2018 bowl game for a violation of team rules. Had 1 foot out the door before the season was over, and coaches directed him to opt out. Immaturity and accountability issues. The thing that I was told is like nothing, and I don't know if you guys heard some of the same things, but someone texted me this. There's basically, it's nothing that's like getting in trouble, like fights. It's just the all in, the overall all in. And we're so accustomed to the Jason Garrett era of only drafting, you know, A+ students, all that, you know, the type of thing, guys who just love football and, you know, eat, sleep, drink football. And that may not be the case with this guy. And my problem, if he's there to play and he's good, then I don't really care about that stuff.
You brought up a good point earlier on because it's very true. Because I've heard this about after they took Micah Parsons too, is the, I don't know if Dallas is the best fit for him. And it's not the same as the other 31 teams. Like all teams are not, you're not the same situation. There's when you're a Cowboy. And as you mentioned, some of the stuff off the field, KT, like there's not only a chance for it to get magnified, but you're also put in situations where, you know, because of the star and the brand that can really lead you down the wrong path, there's going to be people around you that can possibly lead you down that wrong path, maybe more so than other teams, if you kind of get what I'm putting down.
This is a bad place for Pac-Man Jones to be.
There you go. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And you know what I'm saying.
And it's about what – it's not just even about the team. It's also about the room too, right? I mean, if you draft a wide receiver with the same issues and that room – has Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup in it, that's one thing.
Right.
You draft Kelvin Joseph. I mean, I'm not saying Trevon Diggs and these guys aren't great. He's a second-year player. I mean, Jordan Lewis, you know, again, not that same leadership that you have in that room. So, again, you pick a quarterback who has some rap interest and isn't all in, wide receiver, tight end when Jason Witten was here, something like that. You feel a little bit better about it. You pick someone and put them in a room where there's barely any leadership anyways, then you're talking a little bit more risky here.
You lose Tyrone Crawford in that regard. You lose Sean Lee in that regard. And I'm not saying that Tank's not capable of being a leader. I think he probably is.
Different kind.
A different kind, definitely. A different style, and everyone's different. But you can't deny, and I hope they didn't overlook this, the somewhat fragile tension that's been in that defensive side of the locker room over the last couple of years, because that's been a thing. It's unavoidable. That has been a thing. And it's mainly because it's probably just not getting the job done on the field. It's probably the main reason of it. And your first two picks would tell you that you don't give a crap about it.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
And you know what? And you know what? You might be better, so maybe it doesn't matter. And maybe that's the way they're looking at it. So, I mean, I've got less of a problem with those two guys than I do the fifth round pick.
What are you – between Mike McCarthy and Dan Quinn and obviously Jerry and Steven, Will McClay, this isn't their first year. They aren't new to this. If they were comfortable going in this direction, they have to know what the possibilities are, you know, negatively. And so they have to feel confident that they have either the guys that can be the leaders – or there's a little bit of a feeling of let them sort it out themselves. We're trying to get the best 11 guys on the field. We want the best 11 players out there. If they're not the greatest, they don't aren't the greatest of teammates, you know, behind the scenes. As long as they get out there on Sunday and we get the best 11 guys making plays and we're significantly improved from last year, we'll let all the other stuff sort itself out.
What did you think about the corners that they had on the board at that time, KT, compared to Joseph?
44?
Yeah.
I got my board up right here.
Was he the guy for you? Or I know Dane had him ranked around his 70th player on his top 100 or something, and Cowboys drafted him at 44. So, you know, is that a reach talent wise?
No,
Dane even said that talent wise, he'd have him much higher. It was because of the off the field stuff is why he dropped him.
Got it.
Dude, Kelvin Joseph, honestly, probably a top 25 talent in this draft.
That's great to hear.
The thing is, though, when Eric Stokes went at the end of the first, and then the safety started going off the board, who knows what they would have done at safety. It was very clear that they were going. You know, I think about Mel Fonwu, whom I might have liked. Well, he didn't go to, like, pick 101. You know, Paulson Adebo. So, like, Kelvin Joseph was kind of the last guy in that area of long corner that you might have actually been comfortable taking at 44.
That's good.
So they kind of got lucky
reassuring.
In that regard.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another thing, though. If they liked Parsons so much, then why did Parsons say that he hadn't talked to Dan Quinn? Like, Parsons basically said he had barely even talked to the Cowboys.
That's correct.
Like, man, they sure acted like he was the number one defensive player on their board.
Because they didn't think they were going to draft him until they had to?
Guys, this worked out fine the last time it happened with Morris Claiborne. Calm down.
I don't know if it makes a ton of sense. I know they do their things their way, and they're going to be like, you're an idiot, stick to your day job. But like, the whole idea of we're going to meet the week of the draft and we're going to stack our board together seems so insane to me. And then you have this situation where it's like Parsons is openly saying, well, I haven't talked to him. What?
Well, Parsons did do a Zoom call with them, but Mike McCarthy wasn't on it.
That's incredible.
It is pretty incredible.
What are we doing? Okay, let's go to third round. We have
let's just see where it goes,
round.
Guys.
You think Garrett would have drafted a guy he'd never talked to?
Guys, the defense can't be any worse.
Third round, Adrian Quesada, a friend and lead guitar player of the Black Pumas, had the task of announcing pick number 75.
He did well.
Osa Odigizuwa. of the of UCLA Bruins, and that is your pick at 75.
I'm what's your first thing? What's the first thing you thought of when they took him?
The first thing I thought of was he's the fifth round player on my board. He's a fifth round player on my board.
My first thing I thought of was how his brother flamed out in the
and
NFL.
How his brother was a 30 visit and
oh yeah,
you know that's and it didn't even. I don't know, 2 years, I think it was with the Giants.
I think that. I guess this was the draft of like brothers and siblings and sons and, you know, this was like so much association with previous drafts.
So with both of those guys, from everything I've read is that they're supposed to be the better of the two of their brothers. But then again, we're in draft season, so who wouldn't say that? So I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I thought that they might take Melifonwu at 99 based on that, knowing that they had met with Obi too a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And they kind of get long, he's kind of what they would want.
For sure.
And he slipped all the way to 101 somehow, and that's a whole different thing with Osa. And then at 84, we can kind of lump these guys together here for time purposes. Chauncey Golston, a defensive end from Iowa. These felt like more safer type picks, guys with a higher floor, if you will, maybe a lower ceiling, but a higher floor. And kind of what you talked about, John, versatility on the defensive line. You kind of move these guys around anywhere on the defensive line. But I was more excited about Golston than Odighizuwa because I had better notes on Golston, quite frankly. But that's just me, you know. Who knows what they had?
It sounds like Odighizuwa just killed it at the Senior Bowl, and that's like really helped his stock, whether it was the practices or the actual game. I guess he was off the charts, and that was one of the things that they looked at. So that I can't sit here and tell you that I knew a ton about him, other than the fact that obviously his brother was a guy that the Cowboys had interested in, and that didn't work out with him with the Giants. But that doesn't mean that this player won't work out. But it certainly brings in more competition. You know, they didn't get a chance to get a Christian, you know, Barmore, which obviously we would have been intrigued by because we talked about him so much. Yeah, but you knew they were going to address.
He went to Philadelphia, though, so didn't he? So aren't we going to have to face him? Didn't he go to the NFC East or something? I don't know. Washington, maybe?
Barmore, this is the hardest part.
I can't speak for how you guys cover the draft, but for me, like, it's going to be at least another 2 days for me to catch up on what any other team did, just especially when you have 11 picks. Like, it's like constantly like a conference call with somebody. It's like going back writing, trying to write like you know what you're talking about somebody you really don't know much about, you know, like, I don't know, like undrafted rookie free agents / seventh round corners that are taken late in the third round, stuff like that. And then you're trying to like dig into police reports and things like that about guys with character.
It was
concerns.
The Patriots.
It's
Patriots
just real hard to keep up with all that stuff.
Patriots
but anyway,
up to grab him. That's what it was.
I did keep up with that Lions draft, and it was pretty impressive. Speaking of Melifonwu, sorry. Anyway, I digress.
Well, I know. Asad, do you have any thoughts on Golston or Odighizuwa that you'd like to throw in?
Yeah, I think both were guys that weren't necessarily as high on you know people's boards, but Osa for me was more. Someone who, again, I'll admit here, this is more of just like what I had heard. I think I even took him in one of our mock drafts. So I liked Osa. Chauncey Golston, I honestly just didn't know much about, and I didn't know what he's able to do, what kind of strengths he has. But I liked the Osa pick, even though I think it was a little reaching, and to see like you know some of the corners that were still on the board there. I know you had just taken Kelvin Joseph, but I still think. There were some corners that I preferred over that, but, you know, I didn't hate that pick at all.
Another guy, the Golston thing makes me want to keep an eye on Ronnie Perkins, who he went to the Patriots too, from Oklahoma, that edge rusher. So if this guy all of a sudden turns into being somebody that's, you know, double-digit sacks, that one won't be lost.
Had Perkins graded way above Golston, but it's fine.
But you know, it's a different way. What's the difference though?
Decent player.
It's like the length, you know, and it's like the size.
The length.
Ronnie Perkins is a smaller guy, and they went with. I mean, every one of these defensive picks. I mean, even the D tackle that they took, like they're all tall, long arms, stuff like that. It's almost like they value that even more so than maybe even production at the college level.
The bummer about Odighizuwa at 75 is they took the Saints took Paulson Adebo. The Stanford cornerback at 76, I believe. And I was going, damn it, they could have waited till 75 to get the outside corner, but they thought they needed to get this one. Adebo's not the talent that Kelvin Joseph is, but Adebo has no, you know, those off-the-field type questions, and they could have done something else that, you know, 44, where it's like, okay, Walker Little's the tackle from Stanford's there, Cosme the tackle from Texas, but they, again, it doesn't matter.
Because there was a run on D-line early in that second second day, though, KT, early, before the Cowboys made their pick. All those good D-linemen were pretty much off the board, so...
Hey, what about Stevens saying after the third round that they considered a wide receiver somewhere in there? That really had me guess on who they were talking about. It made me think it was like maybe the Amon St. Brown from USC. They did talk to him. They had a meeting with him.
Do you know who it was?
Who was that?
It was Anthony Schwartz, the wide receiver
from Auburn.
And you know, I've heard Dane say many times Anthony Schwartz is legit one of the fastest people in the world.
Okay.
But Anthony Schwartz, I've got a play that I remember. I'll try to explain this very quickly. There's a play where Anthony Schwartz is looking for a ball down the field, but he's looking at the Gatorade coolers on the sideline rather than on the field where the ball actually was. Anthony Schwartz doesn't know how to play wide receiver. So, but they were considering taking him in the third round. They get to 99, and I'm going, man, Elijah Molden's there, but I don't know if they would do it. Melifonwu was there. Might as well double dip at cornerback, right? Melifonwu was there. He's got the length that they want. Maybe Baron Browning if they wanted to double dip at linebacker. Jabril Cox we talked about, you know. There were tons of players there. But whatever. They take Nashawn Wright, the cornerback from Oregon State, who goes 99 in a draft of 32 teams, in which Dane Brugler had him as his 38th ranked cornerback. Now, irrational me went to bed kind of pissed off on Friday night. Rational me woke up and watched some Oregon State tape and went, I mean, I would have taken him in the sixth round, but like, I hope it works out for this kid. He can't move. He can't turn.
They saw the measurables and they drafted based on like, 6'4". How long is his arms? All right, those are our guys.
and that guy right there had, I believe that guy had the longest arms of any corner. Yeah. I think it was at 34 inches.
I think they drafted the two tallest corners in this draft. The Cowboys did.
So I watched two of his games, and yeah, there's times. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, the length is definitely helping him here. But, like, dude, he can't turn and run. You just see it. It's just not fluid. It's not – it's tough, like, for those high-hipped guys. I get it. Like, it's like a shot at him. It's just, why were we doing this at 99?
You know, remember
– they came
reminds
back.
Reminds me of another Kentucky corner, Chris Westry. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Westry,
really
yeah.
long guy.
What about Reggie Robinson?
Couldn't turn.
They just drafted him last year.
Yeah. Yep.
I think for me also with this pick, this is going to be, and it's weird because again, this is the fourth round pick. It's not a premium pick, but this is going to be the TJ Watt, the Juan Thornhill type of process, because right after that, you see Elijah Molden, Melifonwu, and Ambry Thomas all go in consecutive picks. And now this is going to be the guy who, if he is out of the league, if he is not on the team, if he doesn't pan out, and any of those three guys, Molden, Melifonwu, or Ambry Thomas, are all balling out in the league, this is going to be the one where everyone's going, well, you could have had him. And for everybody on the outside, it was kind of obvious that you take any of those three guys over him. And so that I think this is what that pick becomes. The only... if you're looking to give the Cowboys a break, all I'll say is I remember I thought they were reaching on Travis Frederick, and I think everyone thought they were reaching on Travis Frederick, right? So, I mean, Travis Frederick was probably like a, what, third-round pick or something, second or third-round grade?
Second or third, for sure.
Yeah. And look, they I guess they did their homework. That worked out. He probably, in retrospect, goes higher than he did where he did go. So that's if you're doing that, but I still think when you have as many draft picks as you do and nobody really, at least on the outside, has this guy on their boards, you probably could have got him in the fifth round or whatever, and you could have got any of those three guys that went right after.
And because they've paid Dak and because they've paid, you know, Zach Martin and Amari and all these players, Zeke, they're going to be very limited continuing going forward in terms of spending in any free agency. And Stephen Jones made that very clear throughout any press conference he was a part of this past weekend. And he talked about the importance of getting these guys in the draft because you get them on these 4 years, some guys 5 year contracts, and they don't cost you a ton. So with all of that in mind, plus the fact that we all know how bad this defense was, Like, if any of these guys that were taken in the first three rounds don't contribute at all, it leaves open a huge door for criticism that they absolutely have to take, because they had all these picks, they addressed all on defense. They need these guys to play because they're not going to have money to be going out and signing free agents. So these guys have to be, I'm not saying that they have to turn into Pro Bowlers, but they have to be guys that can contribute. And I'm talking everybody from Golston to Wright to Odighizuwa. Like, they need something out of these guys, and it's got to be more than just contributing on special teams.
I don't see, and granted, I only watched two of his games, so I'm going to be completely fair, but I don't see how you could watch two of his games and say that he's a better player than Milifonwu, Molden, or Ambry Thomas. And this also tells me scheme over player. And that's what I was told was going to be the exact opposite last year by the head coach. That's becomes a bit of a
bummer. If you're going scheme over player, I don't know how you I don't know how you wouldn't take Ronnie Perkins.
Yeah, at some point too, Ronnie Perkins.
If you're just trying to get the best player, I don't know how you wouldn't take Ronnie Perkins. But okay,
reached on some of those guys, but they came back on their little moped and totally redeemed themselves as they take Jabril Cox at 115, probably the greatest value in the draft in terms of the Cowboys. And Jabril Cox is a bad run linebacker, but he is very good in pass coverage. Probably, to me, will probably serve as Leighton Vander Esch's backup from the beginning, is my vibe on that. I could be wrong, see how they work Jabril Cox into it, but that feels like that's probably the thing. There's some good insurance if Vander Esch gets hurt.
Yeah, I was surprised that he was still there. I believe the Cowboys had a second-round grade on him. A lot of teams, a lot of experts had him as going a second, third-round pick. He was clearly that guy after the second day that everyone was like, wow, I can't believe this guy's still out there. And he falls to them, and it's one of those things where maybe they were like, this value is too good, even after already taking a linebacker in the first round. But I think it also speaks to what I said earlier, that Dan Quinn watched tape of these linebackers, and he knew that their upgrades were needed. And I will say, Jabril Cox seems like a pretty high character guy. I don't think you have to worry about him off the field.
No.
Yeah, you think in two? You guys think in 2 years this Jalen, this Jalen Leighton tandem becomes the Parsons Cox tandem?
It has to be. If it's not, it's because they brought Vander Esch back, not on a 5th-year option, but they just signed him because no one else wanted him,
or because Jalen becomes, you know, Pro Bowl status again. You know, whatever. That was a very sarcastic laugh by KT. You can't see the video, but
Hey, man, since we're taking
how much
players,
do you think... this is really random, but how much do you think Sean Lee / Penn State had anything to do with them with Parsons?
None? Nope. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that didn't even play there last year.
Oh, I know,
year,
he didn't.
I don't think that factored in. I think the freak nature of his athletic ability and the different ways that you can use him on defense, I think those things... I'll put him in a position where it wouldn't matter if he went to North Dakota State.
I just know they've always liked Penn State linebackers, and you know, it made a lot of sense that, you know, they would fill a void with another one.
And true.
Well, you know what? Hey, Kent, they just like linebackers. I mean, how many other teams are taking, you know, Leighton Vander Esch in the first round, Micah Parsons in the first round, Jalen Smith in the early second, like that? Like, linebackers are not
they
a position
like the
where,
high ceiling, big risk, big reward guys. And, you know, that's Jalen and Leighton. You know,
but I mean, just even at linebacker, though, it's just interesting because it's a position that it's not like teams are adding more linebackers.
It's like it's a position where a lot of teams aren't willing to take risks, but the Cowboys are. You know, a lot of teams are like, I'll take Von Miller, I'll take, you know, whoever your mid first round guy is that's going to be my, you know, by Brian Urlacher or whoever. But
it's kind of like the running back of the defense
guys that the Cowboys like.
Yeah, they like investing in running backs. So.
Cowboys love taking the least positional values, but they also take a lot of corners too, and edge rushers and things like that. You know, one thing I would say, the Penn State, I'm just being truthful, the Penn State correlation that you brought up, Kent, is not the one that I immediately thought about with Micah Parsons. And it sucks, but I can't wipe that out of my head because the details of what allegedly happened are out there. Like, so, you know.
I can't help but think of Jerry when, you know, that day Sean Lee retired, you know, telephone Sean, be like, hey, Sean, how would you like to, you know, replace you with another another Nittany Lion with a little wink, you know, and, you know, having a little convo after.
If they're are operating like that, I mean, let's just not even play the game. So let's just shut it down.
But they might be.
No way.
No
way. That sounds great for like a fictitious book, but there's no way you would do that in the first round like that.
I know, of course.
Too many people in that room that Jerry, like, here's the thing about Jerry, like, everyone likes the good stories about Jerry, but one of the biggest things is just, you know, who he's listening to. He listens to Will McClay.
And I'm not saying Sean Lee influenced him to make the pick, but I just think like that's a storyline Jerry would love.
Yes. Absolutely.
He's gonna build. John is shaking his head.
There's nothing wrong with liking stories.
Oh my God. I hope that that's not.
If you don't think the Cowboys think about marketing before they draft players, then.
fine. I get that. We all know that goes on. But to that level, you're almost taking that over, like, I don't care about the character concerns. We got another Penn State linebacker.
That's terrifying. Hey, listen. At the end of the day, something we can probably all agree on was like, Micah Parsons stood out like a freaking sore thumb there at that position. Unless it's Rashawn Slater, I would have been pissed if they had passed on Parsons, to be completely honest with you. Would you guys have been?
I wouldn't have, no.
I mean, what's the alternative? Like, is the alternative getting two first-round picks? Then I wouldn't be so pissed.
Honestly, with all the cards now that have been played, I don't think that they're taking Rashawn Slater. I think they're trading back even more.
Right. The alternative. I mean, Jerry said that they
Jerry said they were on the phone all day. They talked to multiple teams. There were multiple opportunities to trade back and do several moves to trade back.
Right.
So if it's not Parsons, I bet you that they end up trading back a little bit further, and then all of a sudden you got four third round picks.
I'm saying
another second.
You pass on
to take
Parsons.
Some flyers and some guys with long arms.
Yeah, you pass on Parsons. He goes to New York or whatever it is, and then your defense sucks next year. And in 2 years, Micah Parsons is a great player.
I mean, you guys can just say
like you've got to add value when you have the opportunity to. And that's the thing. It's like just effing make the pick, man. Just do it.
You guys can disagree with me on this, but I really don't. I think all that like division stuff's overrated anyway. The only way it matters to me, after the Cowboys.
Yeah,
I just say after they did the trade, you know, you see people talking, oh, well, you know, those receivers, and there's going to be good teams are going to have good players. The only time it matters to me and are these two is if it's a franchise type quarterback. Like, I'm not trying to trade back with the Giants so they can come up and get Justin Fields. Like, don't want to do that. The other would be in the rare elite of the elite type Chase Young edge rushers. I'm not trying to get that guy. I mean, those guys wreck your entire division. Like, I wouldn't be that worried about, you know,
if they got the same
some
offer,
of these other guys.
If they got the same offer that the Giants did from the Bears, though, to come up to 10, if that happened and they didn't take that, that's effing crazy. Because
I'm sure they did.
I don't think that it was that sweet. There's no way.
Yeah, I think Bob Sturm wrote the next day that it wasn't anywhere close.
Okay.
So, good. So just FYI.
So the Bears didn't offer next year's first to get up to 10, but they did that to get up to 11?
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that they didn't offer that.
If they offered that, then you take it because they have Andy Dalton as their quarterback and Justin Fields. Like, they're probably going to win four games next year. And they're the Bears.
Hey, KT, seriously speaking, let's speak on this real quick. Is this not like, for me, like I thought about this, and I know you're going to have your own view on that, but like, is that day not like one of the best days in like Bears history? Like in the last, I don't know, at least decade? The fact that Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay and then you finally get like a quarterback that like, I mean, again, I'm not some quarterback guru, but 10 times out of 10, if you tell me I got to pick just off college tape between Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields, I'm taking Justin Fields every time. Like, this is by far the best quarterback that franchise has got. And it happens on the same day that Aaron Rodgers makes it very clear that, okay, even he might play one more year in Green Bay, but it's clear you're not going to have to worry about this guy being in your division for the next 4 or 5 more years. Like, he's gone.
And
like, what a great day for the Bears.
And the Vikings seem to go all in on Kellen Mond as their quarterback of the future, too, which might not work out.
I just know the Bears fans really hate the Packers, and so
that was the pick of the draft, in my opinion, was the Justin Fields pick.
That was
what the Bears did with then, and then to get the offensive tackle Tevin Jenkins. To me, though, that's the strongest like first two picks of the whole draft. Maybe yeah, aside thought, from like what Jacksonville did or something.
Yeah, I thought the Justin Fields, like that, him falling down as much as he did kind of surprised me. I don't know. I do think Dwayne Haskins had something to do with it. I don't know how much you put into that, but it just feels very unreasonable for Justin Fields to tumble as far as he did and not even have teams come up and trade up with the Broncos or with the Panthers. I mean, you traded up to 11 to go get him. Like, why not 8 or 9? And I don't know. I just feel like that had something to do with it.
I also thought, damn, Andy Dalton might have stayed here if he knew this was going to happen. Right?
No, I think Andy's still going to be the starter. I mean, they're still guaranteeing him the starter, and the only way he's not going to be the starter is if he's terrible. You know, so it really, I mean,
it's not great.
It's like either they're winning with Dalton or he loses his job to Justin Fields, you know, and so
I mean, how can Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, here we are on a Bears podcast about them Bears.
We just did a Hogan Johns about
Ryan Pace afford that. Like they're on their last, this is their ninth line.
Yeah, they have Nick Foles. They got to go young. By the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Nick Foles.
That's a crazy situation.
Foles wasn't an option.
No, you know, maybe the only thing I would say about the division is the pick that stuck out was Devontae Smith. Maybe you're right, John, that teams will have great receivers regardless.
Well, he was going to probably go to the Giants if he didn't go to the Eagles.
Right. He was going to be the Eagles pick. I mean, I don't see there was any way the Cowboys were going to like do anything to keep him from going to Philadelphia, right? But at the same time, that's going to be scary for the Cowboys.
In fact, let's give it a couple
Who's
days.
Who's throwing him the ball?
Well, hey, man.
Hey, they drafted another quarterback.
What are we worried about?
Didn't they draft like a fourth rounder?
Let's come back next week or later in the week when we do our next podcast. Let's take a peek at the other three teams around the division. Give it a couple, you know.
Yes, we will. We'll do a full look and see what, you know, everybody did and how they stack up. But what are the late round picks here, KT?
Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead, son.
Well, I'm just saying, I don't want to go too off the rails here, but you brought up Andy Dalton. Just saying, how big were those wins against the 49ers and the Eagles late last year?
Oh, yeah.
I don't advocate for tanking or anything like that. I'm just saying, Andy Dalton, I mean, you probably get Surtain or Horn. If Andy Dalton is not your backup quarterback last year.
Well, I'll say this about those two. Like, I thought that, like, they would be good picks for the Cowboys, but, like, I don't look at either of them like they're Jalen Ramsey anyway. So it's like, even that, like, I'll put it to you this way. If they did this stuff that you're talking about and missed out on Chase Young, then you do. But, like, those corners, like, I think they're going to be good players. Don't get me wrong. And if you, I would have said this when last week, like, I didn't think, like, Patrick Surtain isn't a guy that I'm like, man, this guy's going to get like 6 or 7 picks every year. He's going to be the next Stephon Gilmore or something like that. Like, I think he's a really good corner. Don't get me wrong. And then also, I like that his basement is super high. Like, I would have loved them taking him. You wouldn't have to worry about the off the field stuff. And it's a nice, safe pick. But, like, if you told me 5 years from now, Michael Parsons has had a better impact, and they look back at this draft and they're like, man, I can't believe that they would have taken one of those corners over Parsons. He's like one of the best linebackers in the league. Like, I wouldn't be totally stunned by that.
Well, also, let's keep this in mind. Because Saad brought up those games from last year. Life in general is just a bunch of moments coming together, you know, and if you have taken a left instead of a right, maybe something would be a little bit different. If you had made one other decision, John, maybe you're not a writer. Maybe you're doing something else in life.
Sure.
If Caleb Farley's back isn't hurt, maybe another team takes Caleb Farley, or maybe Caleb Farley is there for you. Caleb Farley's back injury about 6 weeks before the draft – that's what even started the Horn versus Surtain discussion in the first place. That's my biggest issue. Was a lot of people were like moving Horn up, and I'm like, just put them on there where you have them. Like, I didn't think Surtain and Horn was that close. I thought Surtain's a better player than Horn. You see,
One of the other things that we'll be bringing up in several podcasts in future years is the same thing that I always brought up this past year. When everyone wants to talk about this quote-unquote boatload that teams are going to trade up for a quarterback if one's there, I missed that boatload that was coming to the Cowboys that when Justin Fields and Mac Jones were both there, just like there was no boatload for the teams that wanted to trade up and ended up getting Tua and Justin Herbert by just sitting right where they're at. Like, it just gets overblown because we talk about the draft so much, about this boatload to trade up, like, all the time. Like, yeah, if you're in the top five, you might get that boatload, but if you're back there at 10, it gets to a certain point where teams are just like, yeah, the guy's still there. Like, we'll move back. Like, or we can come up like a little bit or whatever. But like, this whole idea that Oh, if you're there and there's a good quarterback out there, oh, somebody's going to give you 3 ones and 2 twos and 4 fours. And it's like, no, it doesn't really happen all the time like that.
No, and we make the exceptions the rule sometimes. It happens every now and then. And then we think that just because it happened that one time that we're all waiting for the next Herschel Walker deal or something. Right. Like, and no, that happens once in a sport. You know, like, it does not happen. So I agree with that.
It happens.
Okay, hey, real quick.
Yeah.
They don't re-sign Dak. They take Justin Fields right there?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
What if they would have taken Mac Jones?
I'd kill myself. it happens when they go. It does happen, though, when you're trading up into the top five or top three. Because San Francisco,
hold on.
The boatload was 3 first to get up to 3.
Hold on, though. There's another card here to play. This also comes on the same day that it's been made pretty clear that Aaron Rodgers wants out. Oh, dang it. Your head coach is Mike McCarthy. That's not going to happen there. Okay, yeah, you still go Justin Fields.
There's a lot. You know, we got to talk about the Josh Ball thing, too, but let's do that next time.
Yeah, because there's a lot to unpack there.
Because we need to talk about that. Maybe we'll hit on some of their other day 3 selections. And then we're going to talk. We'll have some audio from Jerry and Dan Quinn. And then we'll talk about the other division. Yeah.
One last, though, we'll get out of here on this. KT, who is one player, you know, maybe through the 3 days that you had your eye on and you were disappointed that the Cowboys didn't pick? You know, every year there's one. There's a Pet Cats. There's, you know, the Xavier Woods, the guys like that that you want the Cowboys to go grab. Who was that player this year that that they didn't make a move on?
It was a defensive lineman that the Eagles ended up getting, Marlon Tuilapotu from USC. Really good defensive lineman. I guess he's hurt because I have no idea how he fell to the 5th round. It doesn't make sense that he fell to the 5th round. He's a very good player, and that's kind of the guy I was like, damn, the Eagles got him. The Eagles got a really good running back in Kenneth Gainwell, too, because there was a point in the draft on day 3 where I was going, I don't have a problem with these guys taking a runner, because if Pollard or Zeke gets hurt, you know, you're going to need another runner.
That surprised me, too. They didn't address running back or, you know, take Sam Ellinger late in the draft or something like that. That surprised me a little bit. But, you know, I think to wrap this up, what we talked about, literally, I think the day after the season ended was the Cowboys can pick not one offensive player in this draft, and we'd all be fine with that. And that's pretty much what happened. I think that, you know, the front office and the scouting staff felt the same way. It's like, we feel really good about what we have skill position wise, especially since they re-signed guys. They got Dak. And,
they got a wide receiver in the 5th round that if they needed wide receivers, they might have taken in the 3rd or 4th.
Right, right. That seems
so
like
he could end up being a guy that might end up being like a pretty nice piece that we look another year from now. And we're like, dang, that's pretty good get there for the 5th round.
So that to me is, you know, just reinforces Mike McCarthy's urgency to be better next year on defense. And because, you know, they get a new defensive coordinator and they put out that performance last year. If they're not even a mid-tier defense, he's out of here. So he's not trying to risk that.
Yeah, I think the front office too, like, I think they can handle, I think they can handle losing close. I don't think they can handle being embarrassed. I think that really eats at them a little
bit. Yes, exactly.
And I think there's a clear, like, this is embarrassing. Let's get this fixed.
Yeah, we can't be having these lack of effort podcasts every week either.
Right? Yeah, if we do that again, I'm probably out, guys. Not going to lie. I just can't do it anymore. We got to try harder. I had fun talking about this stuff. Let's come back again later in the week, though, because there's some more stuff to unpack. Again, that Josh Ball thing's got to be talked about, too. Like, we gotta get into that, see what the other teams in the division did. Hear what Dan Quinn and Jerry had to say as well. We'll do that next time. So, for Father John Vashoda, who has tons of content for you right now on The Athletic, just go find him. Search John Vashoda, add him to your favorites. Under authors. I did. He's one of my favorite authors. Got it right there. Oh, who else do I have? Saad Youssef, covering the Stars, who are... Woo! It's coming down to crunch time, Saad. The Stars trying to make the playoffs here. He's their Stars beat writer, and he does so much more. So make sure you're following Saad. And for our producer, Kent Garrison, who has been doing great work on so many of our NFL podcasts, including the NFL show, and also Prospects to Pros throughout the draft prospect as well. And this one. I'm KT. We'll see you next time on About Them Cowboys.
Y'all stay corona free, all right? And God bless. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.